So check this out. I got word that Hulu threw this crazy party in Beverly Hills with literally all of the biggest reality TV stars. I'm talking about all the Bravo-lebs. Candy Burris, Portia Williams, James Kennedy, Jax Taylor, even Captain Lee, and Kate Chastain. Here's the genius part. If you want to find out what happened at the party, you have to watch the commercials. Yes, I know I'll be tuning in and then signing up for a free trial to get my favorite reality TV shows at Hulu.com. Coming live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy who honestly wants to know, is man panties just any underwear or a specific type of men's underwear? I'm Rob Cisternino. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Rob's Podcast Feedback Show. We've got Trish Hegarty here today to talk about everything that's going on here in Survivor. Winners at War on a jam-packed Survivor episode with that double elimination, Sandra and Parvati going home. We'll talk with Trish from Survivor Cagayan, who, of course, played with Tony and Sarah in her season, and see what she thinks about how they're doing in this season. This week, of course, we had the Survivor Know-It-Alls, and then I had a great conversation with John and Candace Cody the other night. You want to make sure that you catch that one. If you missed it, always appreciate the opportunity to catch up with John and Candace. Also, hope you're doing okay wherever you are. Hope you and your family are safe, and hopefully give you something to be distracted by here for the next hour or so as we go along here talking with Trish. We're also going to have some extra podcast coverage this weekend. I'm scheduled to talk with Eliza this weekend, so be on the lookout for that showing up in your podcast feed. Plus, we're going to have This Week in Survivor and The Wiggle Room, all still to come here, talking about a week number 6 of Survivor Winners at War. Before we get to talking to Trish, let me just take a moment and thank a sponsor for this episode of the podcast. Those are our friends over at Dunkin'. Of course, everybody knows America runs on Dunkin'. Take a sip on the bright side with the new Dunkin' Matcha Latte. Try the refreshing combination of sweetened matcha green tea blended with creamy milk. You can enjoy it iced, hot, or frozen. It's the delicious way to hit the reset button on your day. It's also just a delicious way to drink something delicious. Many Dunkin' locations have a drive-through, which you can go on up and get yourself that Dunkin' Matcha Latte. It's a delicious way to drink something delicious. Enjoy a refreshing matcha latte at Dunkin' today. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. All right, everybody. I'm very excited to bring in our guests to help talk about everything and answer some of your feedback questions that she was out there on the Brawn Tribe with Tony and Officer Sarah, but she was not asked to be in Cops R Us. Please welcome back the great Trish Hegarty. Trish, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, we're doing okay over here. How's everything going on your end?
Everything's going pretty well on my end. You know, it's scary times and everybody's sort of making adjustments everywhere. And my girls are home for a long period of time for the first time. And I was so excited to have them at first. And now I'm like, whoa, now I know why older children grow up and grow out.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you making some time to talk to me about this with everything that's going on. So, how many kids do you have? You have two daughters?
I have two girls. Yep. Yes. Mary Kate's 25 and Claire's 22.
Okay. So, what kind of stuff is going on at your house?
Well, they're actually both still working.
Mm-hmm.
The last Monday through Friday have had conference calls and, but, you know, even in the sales force, you know, not many people are buying things or even interested in hearing about it right now. So it kind of puts everything at a halt. We've been playing cribbage. We've watched a lot of movies that have been fantastic. Captain Phillips, I was dying to see that one. Mm-hmm. We watched this one after. That was kind of quirky, but cute. What else have we done? We've gone for walks every single day. I missed one day, but because it was raining and I just couldn't, it was gray and one of those gross gray days, you just couldn't get yourself to do it. But we've been trying to get out to the beach every day and get some salt air on our face. And we go back out and try to catch the sunset if the sun's out, just taking rides, just doing anything to keep ourselves sane. You know, it's not easy, you know, because you get so accustomed to life. You know, first of all, I work 1,000 hours a week, and this is very odd for me to be home, but I have a lot of things I can do around here, like paint and get some stuff done. But we're just trying to make do and just not to get too caught up in the TV. I turn it on in the morning to get the news, lunch at news, and then one more time at like 6, and then I'm done.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't need to be in front of it all day long because that's not good for you either.
No, and they just repeat it over. The same things just get repeated over and over again, and it just makes you insane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, well, luckily, we're Survivor fans, and we have a nice distraction right now to talk about this Survivor season. Can I just go back to cribbage? How do you play cribbage? Is it a card game?
Oh, cribbage is a board game. Oh, cribbage is awesome. Rob, you should get... How old are your kids?
My boys are 4 and 6.
Oh, yeah. So they probably wouldn't be... They're probably not... Well, maybe if they're... Because, I mean, it's good for me because it only goes up to like 15, but...
Yeah.
No, but you go for pairs. It's a really fun game because you can play with 2 people, 3 people, or 4 people. Mm-hmm. And I just try to make everything competitive. Like I care about it that much and I could care less, but I'm always like, ooh, I'm going to skunk you.
Skunk you? You know, is that part of cribbage?
Yeah, because if you don't get it over, if you win before they get over the line, you get skunked.
What does it mean if you get skunked?
It just means you lose.
Oh, okay.
That sucks.
All right. Well, this was a week where 2 Survivor legends, Parvati and Sandra, got skunked this week.
Oh, did they ever?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The double skunking this week.
Yes.
For some from Survivor Legends. And, you know, I know we want to talk about, you know, what's going on with Tony and Sarah. But just, I guess, big picture, what have you thought about the winners at war so far?
Well, first of all, I think it's a great season. I have enjoyed it thoroughly. A lot of the people I've met personally. And so I didn't necessarily see this season before I met them. And then I met them and, you know, so I didn't have a judgment. But now I get to see them play. And that's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then some people, Sophie, for example, this is the first time she's ever been on my radar, and I think she's awesome. I just think it's been a great distraction with the temperature that's in the country right now, and just I was really looking forward to it. I usually work Wednesday night, so I have to tape it, and then have to watch it the next day, or just catch the second half, and then get the first half the next day. So for me, last night to sit on Wednesday night to sit on the couch and watch it from beginning to end, I was like, this is like heaven. I'm like right on top of it. It was awesome. And I was like screaming at the TV. I think it's been a great, I think it's kind of started off a little bit slow, but I think that's great because it's working up into like a lot of drama.
Yeah. A lot of stuff going on. And so I guess the big culmination the other night was that Sandra ended up getting voted out. Did you see that coming, Trish?
What Denise was going to do?
Yeah, did you see that she was going to?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Did you?
Well, I was, you know, it's hard to say. I really, you know, it's a weird time. You know, we have so much going on, and then I'm sort of like at the edge of my seat. And honestly, I don't even, you know, I was thinking maybe it was possible, but I think I was more worried for Tony.
I was too, to be honest with you. I was too.
Yeah,
I really was. What I find really interesting, well, I could tell that, Denise was really put off, by the idea that Sandra didn't see her as a threat.
Mm-hmm.
And I can really understand that. By the way, you know, here's Denise. She's so fit for a woman her age. Her muscles are having babies, basically. I mean, she's like, the woman is like, she's like, she's so fit. It's it's awesome. You know, that a woman is so fit at her age, and she's a psychologist and she works with people on like a really she's a sex therapist. So she talks about things that are really uncomfortable with people. You know what I mean? So this is a woman that is like, as far as I'm concerned, I see Denise as a huge threat.
Yeah.
She's very likable. She's very athletic. She's very fit. She can sort of, you know, chameleon. She's sort of a bit of a chameleon. She can sort of fit in with everyone because she's worked with all different groups of people. And I think she sees that in herself. And I think that was sort of like, well, I think that was the detriment to Sandra with Denise.
Yeah.
She sort of like almost pushed her to that point, you know?
Yeah. Well, I rewatched the episode again before this, and they're talking about at the tribal council where Sandra gets into, you know, there's the big threats in the game, and then there's the people who are not the threats in the game.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Like Denise, she says, like Nick and like Michelle. And do you think that Sandra was sort of like lulled into a false sense of security by the fact that, like, oh, all right, well, Denise isn't one of the types of players that could, you know, even like pull off a big move like this. She's just going to do whatever I tell her to do because, you know, I'm one of the bigger players and she'll just do whatever I tell her to do.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that when people say all the time, like if you think you're comfortable, then you're not. And I think that's a perfect example of what just happened. She was way too comfortable. And there was just a couple of things that I found suspect, like leading up to that, like she was like, oh, let's not talk here.
Mm-hmm.
Like when she said that, it was almost like she knew what Tony was up to, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. There was a couple of times the Denise thing would just blew my mind. I jumped off the couch. She was smart because maybe the idol that Sandra gave her wasn't real. She didn't know, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's interesting. So she played the Sandra idol first, just in case it ended up being a fake idol.
I mean, I'm assuming that's why she did it.
Yeah. And then she could have gone back and they said like, I'm sorry, this is not a real idol. And then she could go back in her bag and say, like, okay, all right, Jeff, here's the real one. Here's the real one.
Right, 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 right. I think she covered herself. And then when she realized, and then she probably had a plan, if it's real, then I should give it to Jeremy. And I thought that was a really good move.
Okay.
Yeah, I think, of course, you always want to save that idol in case you're going to be the one. But, I mean, she just made a huge move, the queen off.
Mm-hmm.
And that, if she makes it to the end, that's a really good thing to have. Belt, you know,
yeah,
instead of looking as the goat that you're just on this for a ride because you won your season because you just won it. You're like, let's not forget, people, folks, it's 39 days of no food, no water. Somebody wins, they win.
So go back to what you're saying about that she played the idol on Jeremy. First off, do you have any connection with Jeremy? I know you guys are from you know, the same. Okay, so you know Jeremy a little bit.
I love Jeremy, yeah, and I also love his wife Val.
Yes, yes. Who do you like better, Jeremy or Val?
It depends on who I'm talking to at the moment.
Yeah, no, everybody loves Jeremy. And so then to play the idol on him, now, did you feel like that was a good move because you like Jeremy, or did you feel like that was a good move for Denise?
Well, both, okay, because I do like Jeremy, and I'd like to see Jeremy make it to the end. You know, obviously you tend to go with the people that you played with. And so, of course, Sarah and Tony are my first, but I'd like to see the Boston boy go to the end. And mm-hmm. I do think Jeremy's a great guy and he's a wonderful husband and a great father. So in every shape of, when he's out on the forefront right now, by the way, fighting this virus, but, thank you, Jeremy, and Val. I also think she made a good move because I also think in a weird way, Denise was kind of obviously on the outs. And, I think Jeremy is very loyal. And I think that now that she gave that to him, that would be very hard for him to turn on her now.
Yeah.
And so he's going to look at her like, wow. And Tony's going to look at her the same way. Like, wow, that was a really unselfish move. And that was a great move. And they're going to sort of like her for that.
Yeah.
I'm assuming.
I would think so too. You know, that's a lot of loyalty for Jeremy, because I feel like that, you know, that she makes a move like that and she didn't tell him, like, you know, that could scare him a little bit. Like, maybe he's like, hey, maybe I'm gonna, you know, throw my vote in with, you know, Tony and Kim next, and then we'll vote out Denise next. But now you got to feel like that they have like a bond that might be unbreakable.
Exactly. That's, yeah. Right. Because she's the only one that, because remind me, so they all voted Denise.
So, everybody, even Jeremy voted for Denise.
Yeah. Right. So, yeah. And then she voted Sandra.
Yeah. She was the one vote for Sandra.
Yeah. Oh, God. That was so brilliant, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, let's talk about it a little bit more, because I have a voicemail for you. I have a lot of voicemails for you today from the listeners. Yes.
Oh,
yes.
This is funny.
Yes. Okay. So, this is the feedback show. This is where we're going to get some questions from the fans for you. And here's a question from one of our listeners, Nwando, and she wants to know about, was this a good move for Denise?
Hey, Rob and Trish. This is Wando calling from Serbia. I have a question for you. And I wanted to know, how was Denise's move a good move? And I'm truly asking this in all sincerity. I've seen so many people talk about how, like, oh my God, this is such a big move. And yes, it was a big move, but I truly don't get why it was a good move. Sandra, unlike Tony or Kim, actually told Denise her plans, was including her in on the plan, was, including her, told her a huge secret that she had. And I feel like that's supposed to be a good thing. I truly don't understand why this was a good move. And I don't want to be like, oh, she wasted two idols, but she kind of did over someone who was including her. So I truly don't get it.
Okay.
Help.
You got it. So Wando brings up a good point, and I think that this is a fair question to ask. So Denise is there with Kim and with Tony and with Sandra. At least Sandra is giving her an idol and trying to bring her in. Was that the best move, to vote out Sandra and not Tony or Kim?
You know, I'm thinking for a second. If you were over here, you could see the steam coming out of me.
Yeah.
you're probably like, hello? You know, that's an, see, I love, that's why I love this show. People come from different, you know, ways of thinking and see things so differently. And I love that. I suppose if you looked at it like that, yes. But Sandra is also someone who's never going to be loyal. And mm-hmm. she was, you know, once she gave her that, and it came with all kinds of, you know, Sandra wanted to do that, play that, and have no blood on her hands. It was like, I'm going to do this for you, but you can't tell anybody. Like, who wants to play the game being owned by somebody?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, now all of a sudden, now, and not only that, but she's going to keep her secret so she can keep her on. Screw that. This is Survivor, War of the World, War of the winners for $2 million.
So no. Denise made a video on her Twitter, and she talked about that very briefly at the end of her video, like, you know, thanking everybody for all the nice things that they said. She said she didn't trust Sandra. And so when we, you know, factor that in, I definitely feel like that Denise feels like that her and Kim can get on the same page. And I think that she could potentially pick Kim up as maybe like a, you know, number one or number two. And I really think that Jeremy wants to work with Tony. I feel like that those two together, that for Jeremy, he wants to have somebody that's going to be out there and be a big shield for him. So I think it would have pissed off Jeremy for Denise to, you know, knock out Tony in that spot and keep Sandra and Kim around. I think that he would have been alienated. So I think that she ends up, you know, calming Jeremy by playing the idol on him, keeping Tony around, and then voting out Sandra, who she felt like she couldn't trust anyway. So I think that that's the, you know, the best explanation for why she picked Sandra out of those three.
I honestly, I don't feel like I could agree with her anymore. I wouldn't have trusted Sandra at all,
mm-hmm.
ever.
Yeah.
I mean, I mean, you can't trust any of them, but you, there is a time in Survivor when you need to have some trust in somebody. And it's a shitty fact, but it is true, because you have to trust somebody that you know you can't trust. It's sort of like one of those conundrums. You know what I mean? Like, everyone's always like, you trusted Tony. It's like, I didn't actually ever really trust Tony, but he was the person that I felt I could trust the most there. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And had you, obviously in hindsight, I would have done something different, like taking him out earlier, but I also knew he had the idols, blah, blah, blah. But the point is that trust, even though everyone's lying and you can't really trust anyone, there is a trust factor on there, out there on some level. And I absolutely, from the very beginning, would have been gunning for Parvati and Sandra.
Mm-hmm.
And probably would have, I think, kept Rob around for...
Because he's from Boston?
No, because he was an easy... I would think he would be an easy target to get out.
Yeah. Do you think that Rob is doing okay after Tom Brady has signed with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers?
I don't know. There's a lot of people depressed around here.
Yeah.
It's a pretty sad thing. But, you know, Tom Brady was awesome. He did what he had to do, and he's moving on, and good for him.
Yeah. Okay. Let me ask you another question about this from Sandra's perspective, because I know when you make these big moves and they don't work out, then everybody gets on you. But Alex has a question, and he thinks that maybe this move made a lot of sense for Sandra to pull off. So see if you can follow where Alex is going with this, and whether or not that maybe what Sandra did actually was a really smart move to make.
Hi, Rob and Trish. This is Alex from Mexico. Trish, big fan of you and your gaming cagayan. So my comment is about Sandra's move, which has been getting a lot of heat, but I don't think it was dumb at all. And it all has to do with fire tokens. So from our perspective, we know where all the fire tokens are and how the players have earned them or sold them. But from theirs, up until now, they have known very little about them or their power. Sandra, of course, knows that one token can get you one idol, even if it was limited. And neither she nor anyone else in the game has seen an opportunity to earn another one yet for 16 days. So the facts from her point of view are, she has an idol that is only good for that day. She has zero fire tokens. A merge is coming soon, and she is unarmed. She also knows she is a big target and is very unlikely to win individual immunity. So she probably wanted some ammunition with those fire tokens. Was she taking an Island of the Idols lesson in calculated risks? Love the podcast. Thanks.
All right, so Sandra had no fire tokens, had an idol that was going to expire. She tried to turn her idol that was going to expire into not one, but two fire tokens. She then would have, in essence, turned one fire token that she started the game with into two fire tokens. Buy low, sell high. I mean, it makes sense, especially going into the merge. She feels like maybe, hey, I need fire tokens because I'm going to need another idol when we get into the merge.
Again, I mean, that's a great way of looking at it. I mean, if she was looking at it like that, then yeah, I guess I can see that, you know, like she was trying to save herself. That if that's in fact what her mindset was, maybe it wasn't such a bad move.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think that Sandra necessarily, made a bad move as much as I think that that Denise made a very good one.
Yeah.
Do you know? I'm not sitting here saying that I think that Sandra made a bad move. I think if she could have pulled it off and had Denise
right.
do what she expected her to do, I think that would have worked out really, really well for Sandra, for sure.
Yeah. What I had thought with that was I had said the other night, if Sandra wants Tony out, why doesn't she just play her idol on Denise and say to Denise, like, tell Denise to vote for Tony and ask her at tribal council, hey, did you vote for who I told you to? Okay, good. I'm playing this idol on Denise, and then, you know, cancel the Denise votes and then just get Tony voted out. But she doesn't get any fire tokens if she does that.
Right.
So these players must be thinking a lot about the fire tokens because they came up a lot in this week's episode all of a sudden.
Yeah, it did. Well, again, like you said, they don't, if they feel as though that's their only ammunition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Trish, let me ask you about Sandra. Felt like that she had been working with Tony. They were fighting in Game Changers. They came into the season. It seemed like that they had a very good working relationship. And then all of a sudden, Tony ends up getting a little squeamish, goes back to the spy shack. Sandra's like, all right, that's it. I'm out. And she comes up with this whole plan to get Tony voted out. So for Sandra, was this a hasty move to turn on Tony so quickly?
The problem with this is that, yes, I do think it was too early. And the other thing about it is, Tony has this weird, he's very intuitive. He's just,
yeah.
I think he innately comes like that because from his background.
As a police officer.
And just coming to this country, having parents that both spoke Greek. His first language is Greek. Maybe his first language. No, I don't know. His first language may be Greek. I don't know. But he can speak Greek fluently, and he speaks. His parents were first generation here.
Yeah, so, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they were. And so, that's how Tony and I bonded so well at the beginning, because I told him about how my brothers passed away, and he told me about how his father passed away.
Mm-hmm.
When he was young, and that we sort of bonded on that, you know,
yeah.
And how Tony had lost his dog and blah, blah, blah. But yeah, so I think, and Tony's father passed away when he was younger. And so I think Tony had to take on a lot of responsibility. And I think he grew up, you know, in the neighborhoods, and I think he had to use his instincts. And I think he has 100% radar for lying.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he probably suspected from her behavior, or whatever she said or did, or lifted her eyebrow or moved her arm wrong, or whatever it is that his radar picks up on. He saw it and probably panicked.
Yeah.
And knew she was going to flip on him.
So
that's what I'm thinking.
Okay. And let me ask you this about Tony, because this is something we've heard about Tony a couple times this season. This is Kim talking about what it's like with Tony at camp when they're going to tribal council.
He gets like this on tribal days. He's like a split personality.
Jeremy also said in the episode about how Tony has been great, but all of a sudden, you know, we lose the challenge and then there's like a different Tony that comes out. Is that something that you noticed about him in Cagayan, or is this a new thing that's happened to Tony since he lost on Game Changers, that if his tribe is going to tribal council, he starts to freak out?
Yep. No, he did that on ours too. He, because starts to get paranoid.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, oh my God, it's going to be me. He always thinks it's going to be him. So he's got to do whatever he can do. He's trying to figure out who's talking about what they're planning. He's going to interject. Like, for example, on our season, the day that we were supposed to vote, all of a sudden it was supposed to be LJ, Wu, Jeffra, and myself,
yeah,
as one, and all of a sudden he starts telling me that LJ wants to get Wu out, and I'm like, really? Because I talked to LJ, and that wasn't his plan. I remember saying, wait a minute, somebody's lying here, and I'm not sure who, because it was like, but he all of a sudden for that moment saw LJ as a threat, saw me talking to LJ, thought that I was going to go, and all of a sudden LJ had to go out. He gets paranoid. He starts setting up the spy track, starts listening to people's conversations, starts creating lies. And the next thing you know, bam, LJ's out and no one even knew it, you know?
Yeah. So this is a question from one of our listeners on Twitter. Black Mamba on Twitter wants to know, do you think that Tony needs to find an idol to chill out? That do you think would he feel safer and, you know, wouldn't be so quick to jump in the spy shack if he had an idol in his pocket?
Nope. I think he'd still be jumping in the spy shack.
Mm-hmm. Because he needs to know if he should play it.
Right, because he's not. Because he doesn't want. He doesn't want to have to play it, and he wants to try to find as many as possible. No, but Tony doesn't have a personality that's calm. I mean, you can't expect an elephant to be a giraffe, you know, and you can't expect a giraffe to be an elephant
or a llama. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you heard him in the first episode. He's like, oh my God, I feel like I'm on house arrest. Like, you know, remember he said that?
Yeah. And he's like, listen, a lot of us can relate to that, Trish.
Yeah, we can. We can. Exactly.
We want to get out there looking for idols, but we have to stay here like Tony.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think it's just in his, I just think it's in his nature to just to be a go-getter. And he's just a, you know, the whole theory of the hunter and the gatherer, he would absolutely be a hunter.
You talked about the lions and the hyenas.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah. He said that Denise is the hyena. They're going to take out all the lions. And then, you know, he tried to warn Sandra. He said, hey, all the lions need to stick together. She didn't believe him. She didn't believe him. And honestly, you know, Tony tried to say to her, hey, if we lions don't stick together, the hyenas will get us. What did Sandra do? Sandra tried to like, okay, she fed the hyena. She said, here's an idol to take out this other lion. And guess what? It was Sandra, the lion, who ends up going to the edge of extinction.
Yeah.
You gotta listen.
I love his analogies. Remember he said, we just cut off the head of the snake. I mean, he's got these great little.
Yeah. he didn't talk a lot in this episode because he was hiding in the spy shack. But then after the vote happened, I thought he had a very funny reaction to Sandra getting voted out.
How is that possible, man?
Couldn't believe it. He couldn't believe that it was coming. So it was a big blindside for Tony. He's very lucky that Denise wanted to keep him around. So let me ask you this other question from one of our listeners, Zach, who has a question about, you know, does Tony need a Trish out there?
Hey, Robin, Trish. It's Zach from Georgia. Now, Trish, on Kageyan, you were basically like the Tony whisperer. Your job, more or less, was to, like, handle him and wrangle him in. And you seem to do a pretty good job because all of his craziness, we saw what happens when he plays without you, basically, on Game Changers, and it's not pretty. But it looks like he's gained a little bit of self-control in the meantime, but that seems to be unraveling now. I think he needs a handler. He needs another Tony Whisperer to keep him in check. And since you're not there, who do you think is the most qualified to handle the human tornado that is Tony Watchos? Just wondering. Thanks.
Okay.
Bye.
Okay. So first off, Trish, do you feel like that? Is that true? Does Tony need somebody out there to help calm him down?
I mean, I definitely talked him off the roof several times. I think he's matured in the game and I think you can see it this time.
Yeah.
I think, you know, this is his third time playing. He made some really big mistakes the second time. I don't think he necessarily needs, I think we all need somebody to get to the end. Like I said earlier, don't we need someone to trust that we can sort of, you know what I mean? Like you just, nobody, including in life, gets anywhere alone.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't. So yes, he does need somebody else out there. Not necessarily, you know, I appreciate you calling me the Tony Whisperer. That's a compliment. I'll take it at that. But I had four maniac brothers, so that I had some good training. But I think the best person moving forward to handle him without question would be Sarah.
Yeah.
Because Sarah and Tony have a good relationship. They have a good rapport. They understand one another. They're police officers, so they have the silent brotherhood. I think Tony really cares about Sarah and trusts her, and I think that Sarah feels the same way about Tony. So I think if they are to make it back in the merge together, I think that will be, in fact, probably exactly what happens.
Trish, can you tell us a little bit more about that Tony and Sarah relationship as somebody who got to watch it up close develop?
I think that Sarah feels the same way that most people feel about Tony. He's a freaking character.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's a lot of fun to be around. He's funny. He's genuine. He's kind. Tony's a really kind human being. he's out there to play a game, and that's it. That's not who he is in his real world. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I think that they genuinely, you know, it's just like summer camp. You go away with somebody and you spend summer camp with them and you have a relationship with them and you get to know each other. And then, you know, for years go by and you go back and no time changes. You know, I mean, like every time I pick up the phone and I talk to Sarah, Sarah calls me or vice versa or Tony, whatever, it's like no time has passed.
Yeah.
You know, so you just have this bond that can't really be broken in a weird way, you know?
Yeah. And you feel like that those two can trust each other because that, you know, as I'm sure you know well, that there was some bad blood between them after the initial season in Survivor Kagyan when Sarah got voted out, which you did play a very big part in her getting voted out at the merge.
Which I hated every second of. Yes, there was bad blood, but Sarah is also a mature person. And mm-hmm. so I think she was able to rise above that and see that it was a game and that he played it better than she did.
Yeah.
And then,
you know, it's so interesting, the two of them, because they've played now three different seasons together. It's that, you know, they both were there on Game Changers and now they're both here in this season. So do you feel like that they, you know, just have like a total comfort level with one another? Or do you feel like that there's any distrust potentially between the two of them?
I think that they really care about each other. I think they really trust each other outside the game. I think that they have no choice but to trust each other on some level in the game.
Yeah.
And I think that they would be smart to do that. I think that they would be smart to play together. I think that would be a smart move for them to join hands and go to the end. But I think in the end, then you get down to the bottom and then it's like, you know,
mm-hmm.
Lord of the Flies, baby, you yeah. or me. And then neither one of them would be trustworthy. They both become One becomes the head of the mafia, and the other one becomes
sleeping with Whitey the fishes.
Whitey Bulger.
Yeah. So, and both of them are very, both of them are very cutthroat players, and both of them have, you know, had a history of voting out their allies when they feel like that they're expendable. How far do you think that they could potentially go together before one says, okay, all right, this has gone on far enough, but I have to get rid of the other person? Or do you think that Cops R Us could potentially go to the final three?
I think Cops R Us could go to the final three.
Mm-hmm.
I do. I just do. I think that they have the ability, you know, but God, it's so hard to make those kind of predictions because anything can happen.
Yeah.
I would love to see them in the final three. I'd love to see Jeremy in the final three.
Mm-hmm.
I got to be honest. I really love Ben.
Yeah. Okay.
I love Ben.
Do you know Ben personally or just from the TV show?
I do.
Yes.
I know Ben on a personal level and I know him on the show level and I like him on both.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think Ben has been...
He reminds me of like a little kid, like his facial expressions and stuff.
Yeah.
And he's just such a nice man.
Yeah, I do feel like that a lot of people, you know, have the wrong idea about Ben and feel like that, you know, he's not as funny of a guy as he is in person.
Oh, he's great.
Yeah.
Oh, he's great.
So where do you know Ben from going to like the Hearts of Reality?
So, yeah, I met him at the Hearts of Reality and he and I just clicked. He got my sense of humor, you know, my sick sense of humor. And I got his and we just, and, you know, he's loves his wife and his kids. And, I had been thinking about going into real estate at that time and that's what he does. So we exchanged numbers and
I had no idea.
Yeah. So we kept in touch. So we've been keeping in touch. I text him a couple of funny things that I probably couldn't say now because it would be mean, but as the show's going on, he's sent back and he's laughing his ass off. But I am definitely a big Ben fan.
Yeah. So looks like that he also hit it off with Officer Sarah and Sophie on that Yara tribe after they voted out Boston Rob. Were you sad to see Boston Rob get voted out last week?
No.
He's had enough?
You know, I love Rob. He's great. And he's a Boston boy, and I think he's awesome. He does. I do. I think he's great. I just felt like that the episode that he got voted off on, I just felt like that was just, that's just not the survivor it is anymore.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
Trish, is it fair to say that Boston Rob tried to do what Garrett Adelstein tried to do once upon a time? And they didn't call it the buddy system on steroids when he said to everybody, hey, nobody leave the camp. We're all going to sit right here and just talk about who's going to get voted out.
And you saw how that all went down. It was like, we just want to play the game. Remember Tasha? We just want to play the game.
Rob is lucky that nobody dumped out the rice.
Well, I... You know what? You know, the thing is that I think the reason why they sort of let that go down is because they had already decided they were voting him out. They knew all day he was going. So they were like, fine, let's just be bored here together.
Yeah.
You know? There was no way they could have voted anybody else out but him at that stage of the game. He had bullied himself off that island.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, let me ask you a question about somebody who voted against Rob at that tribal council. And this is Josh from Philly, the birthday boy, wants to ask you a question about Sarah.
Okay.
Hey, Rob and Trish. Josh from Philly calling in. My question's about Sarah. I really think Sarah's playing a phenomenal game, and it looked like she was going to be going nowhere in this game before the season started. A lot of the preseason press was directed towards people not wanting to play with Sarah, and Sophie even wrote that she wanted her out first, and now they're paired up. So my question is, how does Sarah do this and get all of her people who didn't want to play with her now to play with her? Thanks. Bye.
So a lot of people have been really impressed with Sarah so far this season. I think that the interesting thing about Sarah is that a lot of times I feel like it doesn't come through, at least in the Game Changers version on the TV show, as much as that. Like when you talk to the people that played with Sarah, they love Sarah. They talk about what a great friend she was to them, and you know that they couldn't believe it when she ended up voting against them. They never saw it coming. Can you talk a little bit about what it's like to play with Officer Sarah? And if this is a new version of Sarah than the one you played with in Survivor Kagiyan?
Well, I think that, you know, just like almost everybody on the island that goes, that gets, becomes a contestant, people are complicated and it becomes complicated. For example, Sarah only has a brother, so she's never had any sisters. She is a complete competitor from the moment she wakes up until the moment she goes to bed. That girl's a competitor. She competes with weight. She competes with MMA fighting. She's out on the job, a tough job, she is a police officer, but she's a, what is she now? She's a, she investigates what they're called.
Detective?
Yeah, thank you. Ding, 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 ding. The light goes on in Trishy's brain. What was I going to say? She's a detective. So, I mean, she's got a tough job, and she's, you know, the things that she does, she's a competitor, and she has to keep a certain face for those things. You know, and you see it when she just steps up to the thing, she's all in. She's never going to raise her hand to say she's not doing a challenge. You know what I mean? Like, she's there for the competition. That's the stuff she likes. And, but Sarah is also very, very kind and funny and charismatic. And sort of a no bullshit artist. You know what I mean? No bullshit artist. She's a no bullshitter. So she's very likable. I think the way Sarah gets an edit, and you have to remember it's an edit, is they show her very, very dry, and very serious, and very, you know, not with a lot of influx in her voice and things like that. But if you want to know who Sarah really is, do you remember on this season when her and Tyson were cracking up, she goes, let me smell your breath.
Yes, yes.
And he goes, no, you're not going to. She goes, let me smell your breath. That's Sarah.
Okay.
Sarah is funny.
Did Sarah ever want to smell your breath, Trish? Is this something that she does?
No, she never wanted to smell my breath. And I would have had the same reaction as her. My teeth have had individual Irish sweaters woven on them, and nobody was coming near these fangs out there or anywhere. So no, she did not try to smell my breath.
You don't think that Sarah would have smelled your breath?
I would.
Yeah. She would do it.
Yeah. But, you know, did you see how silly and cunning and fun she was?
Yeah.
That's the Sarah that I know and love. She's very fun.
Yeah. So she's fun to be out there on Survivor with, because there's some people that are not fun to be out on the island with.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Don't get me going.
you can go in wherever you want, but no, it really, that I think that you know, people like on the outside, I think when you're a fan, you just think of it, okay, oh it's the game, but you have to live with these people 24 hours a day, and there's some people that are just, you know, miserable to be around, and that really affects things.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I think that what happens is it happened to Cliff, it happened to Morgan. I mean, I can only speak from my own experience. People take who they are onto the island. That's, of course, that's what you do. But, you know, people say, well, this is who I am. I'm not like this in my real life. I'm not like this. I heard that like 15 times. I'm not like this. Okay, well, when are you ever in your life without a pillow, without a blanket, without a bed, without your family, without your computer, without your phone, you know what I mean? Without food and water. When have you ever, mm-hmm. of course you're not like this at home, because you're not like this at home. Mm-hmm. You're in luxury at home. So yeah. Of course you're not. And if you are like this at home, I'd feel bad for you. But the problem is some people really are like lazy. And when you get to the island, and if you're lazy at home, most likely you're going to be lazy on the island.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when you're lazy on the island, people don't like that.
Yeah. Now, we know Tony is not lazy. Tony doesn't sleep. Oh. He's a very hardworking guy. This season, he has constructed a ladder to go up. And
that was hilarious.
What do you make of Tony's ladder so far, Trish? Did he talk about the designs for this in Cagayan?
Well, first of all, When you have to go back to, probably people don't even know this. I hope Tony doesn't kill me after this, giving all these facts about him. But Tony had never, ever, ever even camped before he went on Cagayan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He had never picked up he had never been outside. He had never slept outside. He was completely out of his comfort zone. But I do know that he has done probably his fair share of, you know, whatever around the house and things like that. But I mean, I don't know if he's a handyman or not, but that ladder I was like, oh my God, I was thinking he's going to fall down and kill himself. Or mm-hmm. the stake's going to go through his thigh. I mean, that could have gone in a million different directions.
Yeah. I was going to ask you that. Could Wu have used that ladder when he fell out of that tree to try to get those papayas that you were talking about?
He absolutely could have used that ladder. But the best part about that ladder was at the end when everybody was quiet and Tony goes, if anybody wants to borrow my ladder.
Yeah. We love Tony's ladder. My kids are big fans of Tony's ladder. I want to see more videos about it.
Oh my gosh, he's a character. Yeah. He's a character.
So
he really is.
Game Boy Guru wants to know, who has a better shot of winning this thing, Tony or Sarah? Okay, so they were together to start. They got Cops R Us going. They seemed like that they were working with Sandra. Then now Sandra's out of the picture. Tony is now with what's left of the Dekal tribe. Sarah is over at the Yara tribe, and now she's working with Sophie and Ben. Who do you think is in a better position now to move forward the rest of the game?
I think they're dead even right now.
Okay.
Because Tony's coming with his little fans now, and I mean with his little tribe, and she's coming with the people that she can trust, because I think, like you said, Jeremy and Tony are getting along really well. Now Denise will be brought in.
Yeah.
So now it's any man's game now. I'm really interested to see how this all.
Yeah. You know, we've been very focused on these three tribes, but then it's going to be, I think, very interesting when this ends up coming together, when we get the merge. And I think we're going to get the merge not this week, but in 2 weeks from now. Well, I'm sorry, not this upcoming episode, but the one after it, we're going to get the when we get to the merge. So it's interesting. Yeah.
Can I interrupt you for two seconds? I just want to go back to two things that we were talking about.
Yeah.
One, you asked me about Tony and Sarah's relationship. Remember in the season when Tony made her put on the scarf?
Yeah, he wanted to put the ash on her face.
Yes. Do you remember how they were kind of getting silly with each other and they were laughing and they were trying to?
Yeah.
They were laughing, but they were like doing it too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I would say that's their relationship.
Yeah.
Like silly and fun, and you know what I mean. And the other thing about Sophie not wanting Sarah out at the beginning. I understand that because we base our judgments on our own personal experiences and how people play. And I just want to say that if you were to see any of the pre-interviews that they had about me, I think I told you this in the last, every time they said, who do you think you will end up playing? And who I said, I do not like that bald guy with that half tattoo.
Yeah.
I do not. I was like, I do not like him. But that was all based on judgment. That was all based on, you know, whatever it was. And then you get to meet him and you end up really liking him. And I'm sure that's what happened to Sophie. I'm sure she saw her and then she ends up on the tribe. And then she saw what I saw in Sarah and everybody else that plays with her. And she kind of, you know, sees her cunning personality and kind of really liked her.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
So I think that happens a lot, that the people prejudge people and then they meet them and they're like, oh, God, they're really nice, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Especially also, you know, in a regular season, you have people, you're just basing them off of like, well, oh, that guy has a tattoo. I don't like that guy. He looks like a jerk, or, you know, she's not smiling. I don't like her. But when we come back as returning players also, it's just, you're just judging them on what you saw on television, and not everybody is exactly the same as how they are on the TV show.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So as we're going into this merge, I really do think that things are very interesting where, yes, that we see that the original, the Dakal tribe, that Yule tribe has the numbers advantage. But I do think that we have a lot of factions that are potentially going into this. And then it's going to be interesting to see where the, you know, how these factions end up shaking out in this merge, because I don't think that this is going to be, you know, as clear cut as a, you know, one tribe versus the other tribe
when we
reach the merge. Do you see any way that it's going to potentially break out between these little groups where we have the Yule, Nick, and Wendell group, and then we have, you know, Jeremy and Denise, and maybe are they gonna be with Kim and Tony, or are Kim and Tony gonna go back and you know, certainly you're gonna see you know, seems like that Sarah is with them. Are they gonna combine with maybe Kim and Tony and Sarah and Sophie, and maybe Ben versus, you know, Yule and his group and whoever they pick up?
It's going to be a shit show. I like I say, this is going to be any man's game. I mean, we could sit here and predict all day long,
yeah.
But I think that old loyalties, my guess going by human behavior is old loyalties are going to come back, because I think a lot of the people that are in these little tribes now, that are on, I don't think they necessarily trust each other.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're on the same tribe. Maybe they're in on each other just because they had to be by force of, you know, the way the game went. It's not necessarily that those are people they necessarily would have picked or still would pick now.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe like when they get back, like Tony and Sarah have, I think they, at the beginning of the show, they said, we got to get rid of the people with the history. And I think that's pretty spot on,
mm-hmm.
You know, unless it's a bad history.
Yeah. Well, I think they're like, all gone
for,
now at
for
this
example,
point.
For example, Wendell and Michelle.
Wendell and Michelle. Yeah. Okay. We can talk about that.
Yeah, we can talk about that, can't we?
Okay, so we haven't talked too much about what's going on there with the vote where Parvati ended up going home. But that backstory of Michelle and Wendell, I don't know if you heard this, they used to kick it.
Yes, it's funny, I just heard that recently, so I guess I'm out of the loop. But I did, you know who told me that was Cass gave me that scoop.
Oh, preseason, she knew.
Yeah, she knew. Somehow she knew that they had dated, and she goes, they dated, and I'm like, no way!
Yeah. Wait, is...
I felt like it was hot gossip off the press, and it wasn't. It was all old news.
Is Cass on top of who's kicking it and who's not?
I think Cass, like myself, is enjoying the season like I am, and, you know, enjoying season all, but I think she keeps up on it, but then again, she doesn't, you know?
Yeah. Okay. She's just on top of the gossip.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. She had been talking to somebody that had told her that or something. And I was literally, I'm always like so flabbergasted by that stuff. I was like, whoa,
yeah.
Really? And then, so I do tell. And then I couldn't wait to see the next season because she was like, well, I used to date Wendell and now he's... I'm like, oh, this is going to get good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it was like really leading up to something juicy.
Wait, was that the same voice as I got a bad edit? Is that was that the Michelle voice? Okay, so Trish, so do you have any thoughts about this relationship?
Well, I think they're both adorable. She's beautiful, he's handsome, they seem really nice, but you can see that their relationship, I can see why it probably didn't blossom.
Yeah, well, what's the problem there for them? Why didn't this work?
Well, being Dr. Pauline or Dr. Phil's second choice, what I see as the problem is a big communication breakdown.
Communication breakdown.
Yeah, I just think that they're not on the same page.
Yeah. So this was interesting, and I was really trying to pay attention to what was going on here because it does seem like there's some weirdness. You know, we saw a lot of friction between, you know, in the last episode, it was sort of weird between Michelle and Wendell. But here in this episode, it seems like that Parvati and Wendell seemed like that they were having the most conflict out of this group. And so I wonder here, you know, because I don't feel like there was a lot of daylight between the three guys. Do you feel like that was ever a real thing that Nick was thinking about not voting with Wendell and Yule?
I think he thought about it.
Mm-hmm.
I do think he thought about it, but I think he knew better.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder because it doesn't seem like that's a move that would make that much more sense of that, you know, to vote against Wendell there in that spot. And Wendell, you know, when he's trying to talk to Parvati about fire tokens and okay, well give me a name, that what I think Wendell was trying to do here in this episode, and this is just my theory, I think that he was trying to get Parvati to vote for Michelle and Michelle to vote for Parvati. I think that that's what he was hoping for, that they would turn on each other and then they could decide which one of the two women were going to go home.
Right. But he didn't even necessarily really need to do that because one of them was going home anyway, right?
One of them was going home anyway. But I think that what he was hoping for was that, okay, well, if I could get Michelle voting for Parvati here in this spot and not voting with Parvati, then Parvati, who has the most fire tokens, and I don't know if they knew exactly that, you know, how many she had. They're talking about Parvati's fire tokens clearly in the episode. But I think he's feeling like, well, I don't know if I can trust Michelle. I certainly don't want her to have all these fire tokens. So maybe either I could throw, you know, some Hail Marys here to either A, get Parvati to give me like give me her fire tokens and then tell her I'm going to vote somewhere and not do that. Like she's like, don't try to offer that to me. She seemed insulted by that offer. But I think that also I think he was trying to say like, hey, well, maybe we could figure something out. Maybe there's a deal that we can be making. And I think that that deal, if she would have said, oh, well, I'll vote out Michelle, then I think, and who knows if they would have actually done that. I think that that was something that he would have, you know, at least pursued with her to get the two women turning against each other to potentially not have Parvati give her fire tokens to Michelle, get in a fight with Michelle maybe.
Yeah, you know, that could have been it. But I think that honestly, and I, again, it all goes down to edit. You don't know what went behind those closed doors, but I wonder if Wendell, who's very handsome and charming,
mm-hmm.
could have bit the bullet, whatever disgruntled feelings that he had, sort of thought, you know what? I'm just going to work with Michelle. I'm going to charm her, you know, bring her in, and even whether he's going to do it or not, or but just make her feel like she was like, really like, he's not talking to me. Like,
mm-hmm.
I think he could have maybe played her a little bit better.
Yeah, no, certainly. I think that he could have done more to pull her in. But I think that he was afraid of giving off the perception of like, uh-oh, Wendell and Michelle, that's a showmance. That's a target. That's a target.
Yeah,
on
but
Wendell's
they could
back.
Have done it. They could have done it with nobody knowing.
Yeah. Yeah, I just think that Wendell had made his bed with the guys, and I think that he was afraid of that potentially being seen as somebody that...
Interesting play on words.
Yeah. I think he was more worried about being seen as a bigger target, because I think that Wendell's game is all about, hey, I'm not the target. Like, you know, don't, he doesn't want to do anything to attract attention to himself. Like, you know, I think he wants to be aligned with people that are potentially bigger targets than him. And I think to be seen as like a pair with Michelle, I think would have put a big target on his back. And I think that he was worried about that. And I really do think that he was trying to, like, when he was talking about it at that tribal council about, hey, I'll stab you in the back, I'll stab you in the front, I don't care. Like, I think he really wanted to try to make it seem like that maybe he was going to vote for Michelle at that tribal council, and maybe Parvati should throw her vote onto Michelle also, so he wouldn't have votes against him and potentially get that Parvati and Michelle fight going, so she wouldn't get the fire tokens. I also think that this was something that I heard in the episode when I was listening to. Here's Wendell talking to Nick and Yul.
You guys are going to write Parv down.
Yeah.
We're going to hope she doesn't have anything special. And that's it.
Now, he said you guys are going to write Parv down. I wonder if that, you know, was there a plan for them to write Michelle's name down and he's trying to get Parvati on board with that? Like, were they going to try to go for a vote split or split the votes maybe?
I don't know. I never thought about that.
He didn't say we're going to write down Parvati's name. They said you guys are going to write Parv's name down and hope that she doesn't have anything. But, you know, I think that even if she did, then if Parvati votes for Michelle and he voted for Michelle, then it would have been a 2-2.
So you think that maybe underneath you, and then he changed his mind?
Well, I don't know. Then ultimately when Parvati wasn't going to vote for, you know, he put the third vote onto Parvati. It just seems like that this wasn't necessarily cut and dry. And it seemed like that, you know, maybe they were trying to drive this wedge between Michelle and Parvati and it wasn't working.
They may, maybe that was their gameplay. I didn't pick up on that.
And again, this is just a theory. Like, what's kind of fun about this season is that we don't have the exit interviews. So we sort of have, you know, get to, you know, hypothesize about these things a little bit more than in a, you know, season where we would talk to Parvati.
True.
So I don't know. It seemed like that there was weirdness there. And I'm trying to figure out exactly like what Wendell was trying to do. And it seems like that maybe he was trying to get Parvati to turn on Michelle to prevent Michelle from getting fire tokens and potentially, you know, keep there from being, you know, two votes on Wendell that he was worried about.
Right. So. I don't know. Interesting. I never even thought of that. And I didn't pick up on him saying you
mm-hmm.
guys.
Yeah. And I also think that he probably does want to keep Michelle like in his back pocket, but I also think that he doesn't want to, you know. Yeah, I think he wants to like really present to the group, hey, we're fighting, you know, we're not you know, we're not tight. But I think he probably prefers keeping Michelle around than Parvati.
Yeah, I would think that anybody would prefer to keep anybody around except for Parvati. She's slick.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's bring in a question that's about Yule. Okay.
Okay.
Here's a question from Brianna. Wants to know about could Yule be in danger here if this tribe goes to another tribal council?
Hi, Robin, Trish. Brianna from Ottawa here with probably an unpopular opinion going into next week. I believe that if Sele goes back to tribal, Yule is in big trouble. With Parvati out of the way, Wendell is going to finally want to scoop up Michelle. When they need a third, they're going to turn to Nick. Not only does Wendell seem closer to Nick than he does to Yule, but I think Nick is far more likely to turn on his ally than Yule is. I'd love to know your guys' thoughts. Thanks.
Okay. What do you think of this? Is this possible that next week, if this tribe goes to a tribal council, could Wendell and Nick and Michelle vote out Yule?
Well, it's funny because you said the merge and the first person I thought of was Yule, and I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
It's the first person that came to my mind, just intuitionally. He could be in big trouble. I think he's one of those under the radar. He's a hyena. He's a hyena.
Whoa.
Yeah. So I think he's definitely, and he doesn't really have, without Parvati and those guys gone, he doesn't really have the allies.
Mm-hmm.
Cause they were considering him old school.
Mm-hmm.
So. But I also think he's a very good player, and he seems to be very likable.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe it's a brand new game, but I doubt it. I think they'll see. I don't know. It also depends upon the challenges, too.
Mm-hmm.
What team wins the challenges and doesn't, or whatever.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you a question that a lot of people want to know. Chris Rosensick wants to know about the Edge of Extinction and the fire tokens. Chris says that we've seen Natalie hold multiple fire tokens, but not use them on the Edge. Tyson just got there and is already using them for sustenance and morale. What strategy do you prefer? Self-preserved tokens while not in the game, or using them ASAP to take advantage when you can get them? And I guess basically what the question is, do you think that Natalie is being a cheapo depot with the fire tokens? Like, should you spend them as you get them like Tyson is doing?
I think that Natalie is probably one of the most competitive people that ever stepped on Survivor. So
yeah.
I think she would die of starvation before she's going to give up those
fire tokens. Yeah.
Yeah. This is for $2 million and she wants to win.
Yeah. But what's she saving them all for? A rainy day? She's going to wait till she gets five to buy an idol to go back in the game?
I think that's what she's thinking. I think she thinks that those fire tokens are going to get her back in the game.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think she's thinking. And that will give her another chance to win her, you know, win back.
Yeah.
A place on, you know, on the regular island.
Yeah.
And I think Tyson was probably starving and, you know, I don't know how old Tyson is, but, you
he's
know,
30. No, I can tell you he's 39 and he was going to have his 40th birthday, I think, out there on Survivor.
Oh, okay. So he's
maybe
40, so,
yeah. Maybe it was his birthday that he bought the peanut butter.
Yeah, maybe he bought himself a peanut butter birthday present.
Yeah, I couldn't believe how much peanut butter they gave him, Trish.
I know. I don't know that I wouldn't have shared all that.
See, that's so you though, because the back in Survivor Kageon, you had you had the option to get an idol or to get, what was it, rice and beans or just rice?
Just the rice.
Okay, just rice for your tribe. And you were the only person that didn't pick to get the clue for the idol. You said, I'll take the rice, and then you gave it to your tribe.
I did.
Yeah. And so...
Well, I look at it like this, like, it's kind of what we're going through now.
Yeah.
On some level, we're all in this together, even mm-hmm. though we're still competing. You know what I mean? And that's where they are now. They're still competing, but they're in together. And he gets a whole full jar of peanut butter, and he's not going to say, "Hey guys, you know what? I got a token.
Yeah.
And I bought peanut butter, and here's a surprise." I mean, that's what I would have done.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting because, you know, The Edge of Extinction, while it is, you know, everybody is, you know, out to get the fire tokens for themselves, you know, at the, if somebody does get back into the game, you know, that person, you know, this is the jury also. So, you know, it's a double-edged sword.
Right. And let me tell you something. If I was out there and I was starving and I found out that somebody had a whole thing of peanut butter and that they didn't even like give us a spoonful, I'd be like, "You selfish. That's so selfish and gross. We're all starving. Like, he's not in competitions anymore."
Yeah.
It's not like he has to feed him. You know what I mean?
Yes. I do wonder because this is what Tyson tells us about the peanut butter.
Some slack-jawed yokel from who knows where probably wouldn't know all the great nutritional stuff that peanut butter has, but I do.
Yeah, so some slack-jawed yokel doesn't know about how good peanut butter is for you. Tyson does. Do you think that maybe then he's going to have fuel to fish and then he can go out and go like fishing for people? Because I think he knows what he's doing. He saw him catch an octopus. Could he eat the peanut butter, then go fishing and bring back fish for everybody?
Yeah, he could. And then they could have fish for dinner and a little peanut butter for dessert.
Well, maybe he would have the energy to go fish for everybody then.
Maybe he's thinking, "I'll keep the peanut butter in case I get back in the game and I'll need the energy to fight." You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But what? I don't know. It's hard to watch some. It's hard to watch all those people out there be so hungry and you're really not really playing in the game anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, we saw what happened the last time. Chris came back and won, but it was just one person. You know what I mean?
Trish, what does Tyson do if he ends up like in a couple of days, if he gets back into the game, should he like shout to everybody like, "Hey, by the way, there's a jar of peanut butter on the island," or like, does he just not say anything?
No, now that he's been selfish, he never tell them.
Yeah. How mad would you be?
He stunk himself.
You know, what if Tyson gets back into the game and then you were like, "Hey, we were on the edge of extinction for 30 days and there was a jar of peanut butter that we didn't even know about."
Oh my God. It's those little things that just sink you, man. I'm telling you. Like, "You cheap son of a bitch. You had a thing of peanut butter and you didn't even give it to me." I remember when we wrote that, Sarah burned a sock. It got burned because she got wet and we put it near the fire and I had an extra sock and I gave it to her. And you would have thought I gave her a $700 million building.
Yeah.
When I gave her
she
that
was so
sock.
Happy.
She was like, "You're going to give me your sock?" I'm like, "Yeah, I've got two. I'm fine. You need one." She's like, "Really? You're going to give me your sock?" I'm like, "Yeah, dude, I'm going to give you my sock. It's okay."
So what did you do for your other sock?
I think we were allowed to bring two pairs.
Yeah.
And she somehow had screwed up one. And then she was down to one sock. So she needed another sock. And she needed it for also to put in her sneakers. You know, when you put your sneakers, your foot in your and you don't have a sock, it feels so gross.
Yeah, that is gross.
That's one of my pet peeves. I always have to, you know what I mean? Like, ew. So she was really grateful for that. So that's what I'm saying. Like, that pink jar of peanut butter could go so far, just like the rice did. I'm telling you, being nice wins. It does. Maybe not always looks that way, but being kind does matter in the end. It does win.
Okay, let me bring in a question for you about Tyson and his peanut butter. Here's Lucas.
Hey guys, Lucas M. Thomas here. Tyson made the sneaky and hilarious decision to spend his fire token on a jar of peanut butter, and it looks like it was a massive jar of creamy peanut butter instead of crunchy. So, Tyson, were you happy with that purchase?
I prefer crunchy peanut butter.
Oh, man, so sorry you didn't get your preference. Well, maybe it was at least the right brand. My family and I have always preferred Jif peanut butter. How about you?
Also Jif over here. My family was also Jif.
Okay, great. Well, same questions to you, Trish. Which style and brand of peanut butter do you prefer? And do you think it was a smart move for Tyson to spend his fire token on food? Looking forward to hearing your thoughts.
Okay. All right. Trish, what's your favorite kind of peanut butter?
I have a peanut allergy.
Do you really?
No. No. I like Skippy, actually.
Skippy?
I'm a Skippy girl. All day long, brother.
Yeah, and do you like creamy or crunchy?
Well, if I'm having a peanut butter and jelly, I prefer creamy. But if I'm making like something in a recipe, I prefer crunchy.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I'm going to make peanut butter squares, I want crunchy peanut butter. But if I'm putting it on toast, I prefer just creamy.
Yeah.
Trish, but I'm a big peanut butter girl.
Yeah. Most of us survivors are. Are you doing a lot of baking right now?
Yes, I've made a lot of food. But it's weird, though. Like, I mean, my girls are really fit and they're really active and stuff. But, man, they can eat.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I live here by myself. You know, I'm not a huge eater. I mean, I eat, but I'm not like somebody that gets up and has like bacon and eggs, you know, like mm-hmm. I get up, I have coffee, I, you know, grab something quick for lunch. And, you know, when I'm hungry, I grab something for dinner, but I'm not like all day. Holy shit. This is like feeding. I feel like I'm in an orphanage. I'm like, ding, 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 breakfast girls, bacon. They're always, then 2 hours later, what's for lunch? I'm like, Jesus, you just ate.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm glad they're healthy eaters, but I'm out of work, dude.
Yeah.
I can't afford the groceries.
Yeah. Well,
I am out of work.
Yeah. Now, is that because of the whole situation right now?
Yeah. I mean, I bartend and then at night and then I have a Pilates studio. So no one's coming to either one of those places right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's okay. You know what? I'm nobody else in this country. And this is not a pity party. It's just a reality slap. It is what it is. And I'm not sitting around feeling sorry for myself. Because it is what it is. And we all have to do what we have to do, you know, but I was laughing when I was thinking about today. Cause one of the things I've always taken pride in is that I have a lot of skills. You know, I have a teaching degree. I used to be a school teacher. I taught figure skating for years.
You taught figure skating?
Yeah, I used to teach skating. For Bay State Ice Skating School for years. I've been a coach. I could go back to coaching. There's a million. None of those things apply right now because the skating rinks aren't open. The schools aren't open. I'm like, oh my God, I can't go back on any of my skills because all of my skills require, you know, like kids to be able to go out in public and things like that. So I just called my girlfriend and she's a landscaper. So I'm going to go to work for her for do some landscaping because at least I can be outside and make some money, you know?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I am a survivor.
Do you have to have any sort of training for that? Do you have a background in that?
I've been a homeowner for 21 years.
Yes.
And I am basically over here scratching my imaginary balls. I clean the gutters.
So you got it. You can do it all.
My God, there isn't anything I can't do. As a matter of fact, I can tell you a really quick story about my kids. This is like 15 years ago. Before we moved back here, my kids were down the hallway and they were talking about this lady, her kids off at school. They were young. She's so fake, Mom. She's like a Barbie doll. She's like, she's got big boobs, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh my God, you girls, this is horrible. Who are you talking about? And, They said the woman, they were accurate. So I didn't want to say, oh, you're not accurate. And then I said, well, you never ask a kid this question. I said, so you guys think she's a Barbie doll, right? And they're like, yeah. And I go, well, do you guys think at all I'm like a Barbie doll? And my daughter stood up with her like little mushroom hairdo and her missing tooth. And she goes, oh no, you're like a half Ken. I was like, oh, great. Which half of me? Meanwhile, I've got like oil all over my face because I've got the car up in the garage on the stills as I'm changing my oil. What makes you think I'm Ken?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, I can take that on.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, bottom half Ken is not like the worst thing.
Yeah, on Survivor, I was a half man, so that I was really a man. Remember I said that? and they went, everyone went crazy. Oh my God. They thought I was serious the way they edited it. I woke up the next morning and everyone's like, you do look like you have a penis and you talk like you have a penis. You fight like you, I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
I was kidding.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Trisha, I don't even remember where we were anymore.
I'm sorry. I'm a king of queen of distraction. I think we were at
we're talking about peanut butter. Peanut butter. You like crunchy in a recipe.
I do. Okay, now we're back. Don't let me go again.
Yeah. Let me play a question for you. This is from Eli, has a question for you about the edge of extinction.
Hello, this is Eli from upstate. And I have a really important question that just sprung up in my mind. So in the last episode, we were left with no teaser of an upcoming merge. I guess there's just going to be 12 players left. Another person's going to be sent to extinction. And then there's the merge at 11 people. And in this modern era of Survivor, I'm confused because usually we merge at 13. So then this idea came up. What if not one person returned, but two people returned from extinction? I'd love to hear your response. Thank you.
Okay. Trish, do you think, is it possible? Could two people come back from the edge of extinction?
I mean, I suppose, right? I mean, they can do anything they want.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
I don't know. It feels weird. You're going to bring back two people from the edge of extinction. I mean, the last summer they brought back just one. You know, I can understand why they would potentially bring back two people because they typically merge at 13 in all of these seasons. But it does seem weird that they would bring back two people from the edge.
Yeah, I think that might become too complicated. I mean, they can do anything they want. I don't think they would, though. Mm-hmm. I don't. I just don't see how that would. It would just become too complicated, yeah. I think. I don't know.
Because also, and then you're going to bring somebody back later on in the season, presumably. So basically, this is like a 23-person season.
Yeah.
You know, that's wild. That's wild to try to do that. Let me ask you, the last time we spoke, Trish, that you, and I really appreciated this, that it was back in, I think it was in October, and we were dealing with that we were scheduled to talk, and then what happened? There was a bad storm.
This crazy, weird storm.
Yeah.
And it was like, you were in New York at Know-It-All.
Yeah, I went to New York and it was, you know, we had like this massive downpour that hit us at like, you know, right when I was like getting into go to where we were doing the show at like 5 o'clock. But I guess it went up the Northeast and really just, you know, knocked a ton of things out as it went up the Eastern Seaboard.
Yeah, we got hit here on Cape Cod's one of those funny places. It's as you know, it's an island off of, it's about an hour and a half south of Boston. And it's pretty much the end, a little piece of the end of the world. And we're surrounded by water, and just like any island is. And we got hit hard. When we get, we either get it or we don't. And that storm got us good. And we were out of power all over the Cape. I couldn't find a computer was open.
I just wanted to say, I appreciated that time that you were driving around. You tried to find a place where you could go, where you had power, where you could talk to me. And I really appreciated that.
Yeah, that's so funny. God, that seems like that was like last week and it was in October.
Yeah.
That was 7 months ago.
I know. It was a long ways ago. And now, you know, we're always talking under these extreme circumstances.
I know. What is it about us? Well, you know, I am Ellen Griswold, so you may have stepped into my world. You never want to be Clark.
But when we were talking back in October, you were talking about how that there was an issue with all of the sharks on Cape Cod.
Oh, with my Weird's Whitey t-shirts. I sold out of my Weird's Whitey. Oh my God, people loved it. Talk about a conversation starter. I got to get more t-shirts, but I'm holding off until this whole nightmare passes through, another nightmare. Yeah, the Where's Whitey went off great. It was so funny because so where I work, everybody got the T-shirts and everybody's wearing Where's Whitey. And you'd walk through the restaurant and you'd hear people like, "Where's Whitey? Yeah, he's dead. We all know where Whitey is." And I'm turning around with a shock. I'm like, "No!" As I'm shaking my little ass. "No, he's not. He's right here." And I'm showing them the shock. They're like, "Okay, wow." But yeah, I sold out.
Did the issue with the sharks ever get resolved?
No. Oh, no. Well, they're just on hold now because it's cold right now. So the seal's on here. But when they come back.
Yeah. Oh, so the sharks are.
Are the seals here? No. We don't have any shark sightings now. They'll come back. The sharks come back in June.
Okay.
I believe. I might stand to be corrected, but I'm pretty sure they'll be swimming on back in June to torture us and scare us. But don't be afraid. That's what Whitey tells you.
Okay. And the shirts will come back then.
And the shirts will come back, yeah. But this time, I only had long sweatshirts and T-shirts. But now, just to get it going to see if the product would actually sell and if people liked it and people loved it.
Yeah.
So it was awesome. As a matter of fact, this is really funny. So this comes back to you. So here I am. I'm at the Kettle Ho in Kituit, Mass., which is this little teeny town in the middle of nowhere. And it's a neighborhood bar where people can walk to and stuff. It's fun. I love it. And I just love people, you know, and being around them.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyways, this lady comes in and I'm behind the bar and I'm, you know, pouring a Sam Adams. And this lady goes, "Hey, where'd you get that Where's Whitey T-shirt?" I said, "Why, you like it?" And she goes, "Yeah, I love it." She goes, I heard this woman from Survivor talking about it on this podcast. I go, "Yeah, bitch, that's me."
Yeah.
It was so funny. And this is the best part about it. She was family with Whitey Bulger. She's like, "My in-laws are Whitey Bulgers," and she bought like 10 T-shirts from me. So thank you very much.
Wow.
Yeah. She goes, "I heard this girl from Survivor talking about those," and I go, "That's me."
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, "No way." And she's like, "I want to buy them." And they were all in my back of my, they were in, all in the Whitey van. So off I went, over to the back of my car.
Now, the Whitey van, is it like have like shark decorations on it?
Not yet.
Okay. It's just where you keep the shirts.
It's just where I keep the shirts. Oh, yeah. Yeah. This is, I'm at Whitey's headquarters right now, which is my home. did you ever see the shark? You saw the shark dance that.
I did. You were wearing like a shark onesie?
Yeah, I was wearing a shark onesie. And he was singing, "Go, go, go." How's it go?
Yeah. Why don't we let Tony tell you how it goes? Because it seemed like that this season he was the one that was able to find Whitey.
Baby, yeah. Shark doo 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 doo. Sandra shark doo doo doo.
Yeah, well, that's a far cry from the last time he came across a shark. I told you that story, right?
Remind me.
So we're out in Cagayan, and we had the merge, and we had just like, they gave us like a bottle of like rum or something, and we had like maybe like a quarter of it left, and Sarah and LJ and I took a little quick little sip of rum bottle. It was the homemade rum from Cagayan, and we decided to go out fishing, and so Tony gets all the gear on, and it's Cagayan Secret Scenes. It's one of the funniest things. It's so funny. And so I'm on the boat, and it's a big boat, and it's awkward. It's not your average like rowboat, because the boat was so wide that it was hard to really get a good row going. Do you know what I mean by that? Like it didn't feel like your standard rowboat. It was like wider or something. It just, you couldn't get it going right. And so Tony gets off and he's in the water and I'm still on the boat in my own little world, enjoying life at the moment. And all of a sudden you hear LJ go, "Tony, Tony." And Tony looks up and they're about, you know, 50 feet away from each other. And LJ had popped up and he goes, "Look." And you could see all these fish jumping around in the water. And Tony goes, oh, cool. And LJ goes, yeah, that is cool. He goes, you know what comes after them? And he goes, what? And he goes, sharks. Tony goes, sharks? He goes, yeah. And he goes, fish, fish. He goes, get the boat back here. There's sharks coming. And I started laughing. And I get silly. And when I get silly, I lose. I couldn't row. I couldn't even like acknowledge it. I was laughing so hard. I knew there wasn't sharks. I've grown up on Cape Cod. There's no sharks in here. This was a little too bad. There was no need for them to be there. I'm sitting there cracking up. So he screams back to LJ, 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 seriously. And LJ's like bullshitting him. Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're coming. So he starts coming. So he goes, come on. He starts begging. Come on, Trish, man, please. I'm serious. There's sharks coming. I'm dying laughing. So he starts swimming towards the boat with all the cameramen, and he tries to get on the boat, and they're kicking him off. This is for $1 million, shark or no shark. Get your ass up.
I found the clip. Can I play some of it?
Yeah.
It okay. All right. Here we go. This is Survivor Kagyan secret scene. LJ. I don't think that's what it's called. Okay.
Hey, Tony. Look at all the fish jumping. See a big old shark coming.
Hey, Trish, come back this way, because there's a lot of fish jumping. It might be a shark chasing them.
Yeah, it's a shark.
It's a shark?
Yeah, buddy.
Trish, come here. Trish, can you come get me, please?
Sure.
Here they come. They're coming now, brother.
There's no sharks in here.
Look at the fish. Look, what do you mean there's no? Look at the... Come on, Trish, please.
Once I heard shark, I went into full panic. I can't definitely, nobody can outswim a shark, but me especially, I can't swim. So I'm holding the spear and I'm like, what the hell am I going to do? I'm looking under the water with the goggles and I'm in panic mode, looking, waiting for a shark to come my way. I didn't know what I was going to do. I was just like, I just started screaming. It was a horror and I won't do it again.
Don't worry, there's no shark.
There's sharks in here. Don't tell me there's no sharks in here.
It was a horror for Tony.
But when he ever went over to the boat and they kicked him out and said, get back in there, this is for $1 million. I just almost never came back. I almost floated away in the canoe.
Yeah.
I was hysterical.
Trish, that makes sense that when he found the shark in the water, that he picked it up by the tail and just started running around like a crazy person. He's scared of the sharks. Yeah. Okay.
I'm gonna have to send
funny.
Him a whitey sweatshirt.
Yeah. He might be too scared to wear it. It could be a horror.
You can hear me in the background go, there's no sharks in here. He's like, yeah, there is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When is this? Is this after the merge? I guess he's wearing a black buff in this video. Must have been right after the merge if LJ is still there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
LJ was funny. God, he was cracking up doing that. He tortured him on purpose. That was funny.
Maybe that's why Tony wanted to vote him out.
Maybe.
That guy, LJ, he thinks he's so funny with the shark. I'm going to vote him out tonight.
Who knows? He changed his mind every 30 seconds.
Tony.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Trisha, anything else you want to say about everything that's going on in Survivor? Is there anything that we didn't get to?
I think we pretty much touched about everything. I just want to reinforce how much I've loved the season, how much I'm really enjoying seeing some of my good pals out there and all the good play. And I just give Denise the high kudos. I know maybe some people don't think it was a good move, but I thought it was great.
Yeah, I think most people do think it was a good move. I think it was just, you know, an interesting question that Wando had about, you know, why Sandra out of anybody that she could have taken out of that spot.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're set up at your house. Anything else fun going on over there besides the cribbage?
Not. I mean, I don't have necessarily all that exciting life anyway. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's not summertime. When the summertime comes, this place becomes magical, and then I'm busy and out. But in the meantime, it's a pretty quiet here, you know?
Okay.
We were looking forward to spring and the summer, so hopefully we'll have one, you know?
Yeah, I hear you. Trish, all right. Well, thank you for making some time to talk to us. I know there's so many people that appreciate
it. Oh, Rob, thank you so much for having me, and thank you so much. This is been something that I've been actually looking forward to all week because I had nothing else to look forward to.
Yeah, well, it was a highlight for me as well. And I know so many people appreciate, you know, right now having stuff to listen to. So
I agree. Yeah. I agree. So and I just want to say thank you so much and keep your family safe and your wife and thank her so much. I know you told me she's a nurse and she's out there fighting on the front line. And we really appreciate people like her because it really takes a lot of courage and a lot of bravery to get out there now, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well,
do the right thing.
Trish, thank you so much. If people want to follow you, if they want to get some t-shirts when they come back in, where should they go?
Jesus, you asked me the last time and I said, well, and I didn't even need anything because they sold out. I'll get it out there.
Okay. Well, what about just your social media? Just at Trish Hegarty.
My social media is at Trish Hegarty. I'm not the greatest on social media. Lately, I've been trying my best to be a little bit better.
Yeah.
But I'm at Trish Hegarty. And then my website is for my speaking. And I'm attaching my plies to that as TrishHegarty.com. Yes. and then Trish Hegarty just at my Facebook is usually what I'm most active on.
Yeah, I'm laughing because I'm on your Twitter. I see that you tweeted a video that a friend of mine had already sent me this morning. Can I play it?
Oh yeah,
let me. Okay, this was a video that Trish shared on Twitter today.
Because of coronavirus, you are going to be quarantined, but you have a choice. Do you A, quarantine with your wife and child, or B?
B. B.
Yeah, I'm choosing B at this moment myself. No, I'm only kidding. I love my girls. I'm so glad they're home.
Yeah. I definitely, because I'm here all the time by myself anyway. I'm ready for everybody else to get out of my quarantine. You know,
yeah,
I'm here by the. I'm fine. Like being stir crazy isn't my problem. It's everybody else being here all the time that's the issue.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I hear you because I live alone, so I understand.
I'm good. I could do another 5 years here by myself, standing on my head. It's everybody else that's getting in the way.
It's everybody else that's having the problem. I hear you. Yeah. I really do. Oh, I just want to tell you one thing that I was cracking up today because my girlfriend and I were over the other day talking about old stories, and I was telling her about how my girlfriend, my best friend Val Kidd, when I was a kid growing up, got the first karaoke song, and guess what the song that I sang loud, proud, and on the third floor of her house in Needham, Mass on South Street. Guess what song I sang?
I'm a survivor.
I will survive.
Yeah.
Hey, do, 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 do. And you know what? I didn't know it would become my theme song.
Yeah.
Right up until this moment.
Yeah. All right. Well, Trish, thank you so much. I really appreciate
Rob,
it.
Take care.
Yeah, and stay safe, okay?
Yeah. Yep. Take care.
Okay.
Bye.
Hi, everybody. There you have it. Trish Hegarty. Lots of fun catching up with Trish here today. Some fun moments to be sure with Trish. All right. We've still got a lot to do this weekend. Supposed to talk to Eliza on Sunday. Also going to have our This Week in Survivor, plus not to mention what's going on with the Wiggle Room as well. Make sure you get your wand offs in for the Week 6 wand off. Should be a jam-packed wand off between everything that went on in this week's very newsy episode of Survivor between Parvati and Sandra and everything else that's gone. Tyson's peanut butter. Who knows what the wand off is going to bring in. That's going to be on Monday, so be on the lookout for that. Of course, if you are looking for people to talk about all of this stuff with, or if you're looking for just more people to interact with, come on and be a part of our Rob is a Podcast patron community over on Facebook. We've got over 2,000 people in our Facebook group talking about everything that's going on with Survivor and the different podcasts, and then also talking about their shared experiences going on right now. Plus, we're doing a lot of additional patron content over these next couple of weeks to try to make you guys keep you busy with doing, taking a look at something. So we're trying to do more shows on Facebook, and then so go ahead and check that out if you're interested in that sort of thing at robswebsite.com/patron. If not, feel free to enjoy the hours and hours of content that we're going to be putting out for you here in the podcast feeds between RHAP, post-show recaps, reality TV, Rehab Ups, as we are trying to make the best of a tough situation that we're all going through. At least we have some Survivor to talk about at this point in time. So thank you guys so much for listening. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.